know what time it is? It's time to ball about the South with C. Wood. Ball about the South, coming at you from a Southern perspective on the NFL, NBA, HBCU, and of course, some of the best talk and analysis on the SEC. Real sports talk, real Southern flavor. Follow me and the show at C. Wood on Sports on X and IG. And now, it's time to ball about the South. What's good? What's good? It's C. Wood. Man, I want to welcome you into the latest episode of Ball About the South with C. Wood. Ball About the South, it is that sports podcast where it's real sports and real Southern flavor. And definitely appreciate you joining me here at whatever time you're listening to the show, whether it's on Google, Apple, Spotify, whatever platform you're listening to the show. I definitely appreciate it. I would ask you to do me a favor, though. I would really like you to like, subscribe to the channel, subscribe to the podcast so that you know when I'm dropping another episode. Usually it's on a weekly basis. Definitely going to try to make it on a weekly basis here. We're in the middle of, right now, at the start of football season. We've got the college football games going on full blast right now. We're going to get the NFL going full blast here later this week. So, yeah, man, please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Share it with your friends, your family, and all of that, and let everybody know about Ball About the South. And hopefully this podcast can grow and grow and grow and grow. Anyway, man, a lot to talk about, to say the absolute least. College football did not disappoint in its opening weekend, in its full opening weekend. It never disappoints. And I'm going to put it to you like this. Every time, there are going to be a couple weeks in the college football season. And obviously, we all know, at least, you know, the college football season is the shortest season of the major sports that there is. It's the shortest. And there are always going to be 2 or 3 weeks in that college football season that we look at the schedule and we're like, damn, where are the big games? Where are the big games? There are no big games. And then as soon as we say that, boom, we get a crazy upset from out of nowhere. We get a crazy game that goes, I don't know, 5-6 overtimes or something like that from out of nowhere. Something happens. We get a great performance. Something happens to get us through that weekend, to make it great some kind of way. And now, while I'm not going to say that we didn't have any big-time games in this week of college football here in the opening week, We didn't have many. When you sit down and really look at it, there obviously the biggest marquee game on the slate this past weekend was the FSU-LSU game. I mean, that was obvious. But other than that, you sit down and kind of look back at it. This weekend was really, really kind of blah to a certain degree. I mean, just think about it. Just look at it and I'll give you an example. A 2:30 game on ESPN this past Saturday was Auburn and UMass. University of Massachusetts at Auburn. Now, look, no disrespect to UMass, no disrespect to the Minutemen, their fans and their players and all of that. But, you know, usually the ESPN game at 2:30 is a pretty good matchup, whether it's the Big Ten game, SEC game, or whatever. I mean, ESPN, it shocked me when I saw that game was going to be televised on ESPN. Then you back that up, you had really the marquee game for Saturday, all of Saturday, was North Carolina, South Carolina. Which, okay, pretty good matchup. Don't get me wrong. Good matchup. Don't get me wrong. But these are, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina. You're not talking about blue blood type programs going at each other there. So it's crazy how things work out, right? Really one of the, probably one of the lightest week one slates we've seen in a long time, or maybe ever. And then you get Deion Sanders. You get Coach Prime. You get Shedeur Sanders. You get Travis Hunter. You get the Colorado Buffaloes in their trip to TCU, Fort Worth, Texas. Absolutely unbelievable game. Colorado just shutting everybody up. Coach Prime was out there. He told you he was coming. He told you that. You didn't want to believe. You didn't want to believe. He's coming. And then you sit there and you get ready for Sunday's action as FSU and LSU do battle in Orlando. And then you sit there and like, man, you get a blowout game in that one. And it's just like, you know, you sit there and start thinking about, you know, I start thinking about this anyway, being, you know, trying to get my podcast together, trying to get this episode together. What am I going to lead off with on this show? Obviously, the first thing I thought it would be this Florida State LSU game. I mean, that's what I would have obviously thought coming into the weekend. Even with the Colorado thing, I think I would have led off, especially this being a show here in the South. I thought the LSU-Florida State game would be the game that I would lead off with. What happened to LSU in the second half, man? So, Florida State, you know, so I was like, oh, man, like there's no bigger story than that right now. Even with the Colorado thing, Florida State blowing out LSU in the second half the way they did with such domination was absolutely crazy. So, yeah, I got to lead off with that game. And then Monday night happened. The Clemson Tigers showed up at Duke in Durham, North Carolina, and decided they would only score 7 points. So I got to start right there. I've got to start with that football game, man. 28-7, the Clemson Tigers go down to the Duke Blue Devils in what was, in the words of Dabo Swinney, one of the strangest games I've ever experienced. Ever. Here's Dabo right here, right now, talking about that football game.
Man, congratulations to Duke and Coach Elko. Obviously a huge, huge win for them, and then they earned it and they deserved it. And an incredibly disappointing loss. That's honestly, all my years of football, I've never been a part of a game like that, ever. And been here at Clemson a long time. Since I've been the head coach, we were 58-0 when we rushed for 200 and passed for 200. That's usually a pretty good indicator, and I think in Clemson history, we were 108-0, never lost, ever. But you got to finish. You got to finish. And obviously we did not do that. So many opportunities, on the 1 yard line a couple times, 1 for 4 in the red zone, obviously the turnovers, 3 turnovers, a couple low block kicks.
So yes, that is Clemson head coach Dabo Swinney talking about the crazy game that we saw Monday night there in Durham, North Carolina. I tell you what, look, man, you got to give it up to the Duke Blue Devils. You got to give them their props for that football game. I tell you what, I like that quarterback Leonard. Maybe not the most athletic guy in the world, but I tell you what, he knows how to get out of that pocket. And he can use his legs to get where he wants to go. He did it several times in that football game. He hit timely passes. Wasn't the best passing attack in the world. But, it got it done. Got the job done. It's just that simple. So, first and foremost, I have to give my props to them. They did the job, really dominating performance in a lot of ways. And then especially defensively. That defense is extremely physical. That's the first thing that just kind of popped off the screen to me looking at that Duke football team, is that their physical defense. They look like the better team Monday night. Point blank. They look like the better team. And Dabo's talking about, oh, you know, such a strange game, and they didn't do this and they didn't do that. They didn't finish drives. They had those four drives inside the red zone, two missed field goals. They had the fumble. Was it one fumble and a turnover on downs? Whatever it was, he was right. Four trips where they got inside the red zone and they came away with nothing. Then the only touchdown that they had was their fifth red zone drive, where they started at the 20 off the muff punt from the Duke punt returner back early, like in the second quarter. That was it. That was the only touch. That was the only score they got all night. But, you know, Dabo's going on and talking about this. But guess what? Dabo, it's your fault, dude. It's your fault. I mean, this team, you sit there and you look at it, and we've seen this team here the last couple of years. Don't get me wrong, good football team. But this team does not resemble the talented, really super talented teams that won those two national championships back several years ago for Dabo Swinney. This team doesn't resemble that at all. Maybe a couple players here and there. You can still see, you know, some star power, I think, on the defensive side of the football. But offensively, dude. I mean, and everybody came down on DJ Uiagalelei. I think I said that right. Everybody, you know, kind of came down on him the last couple of seasons. Starting to think it wasn't his fault. His first game with Oregon State this past weekend against San Jose State, 20 for 25, 239 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, it was San Jose State, so, I mean, I get that, but, I mean, it's looking to me like it's more, they just don't have the weapons. Klubnik, I think, probably can be a pretty good quarterback. I mean, obviously, he was one of the higher-rated QBs in his class coming out of high school. And I think he probably has some juice to him. I just don't see anybody for him to throw to. And that goes back to the head coach, because he is playing this game where he wants to make it seem like, okay, you know, well, I'm just going to build our roster. I don't like this NIL stuff. I don't like this transfer portal. So we're going to be the only program in the country doing it the right way. I'm going to build my program up the correct way. We're going to show y'all how it's done. And basically what he's shown himself is losses in three of the last four games. He's shown how the number 9 team in the country can drop to be the number 25 team in the country. That's basically what he's shown here with that performance Monday night. And yes, the Clemson has lost three of their last four games. They lost to Tennessee in the Orange Bowl. They lost to South Carolina. It's three in a row. I guess the ACC championship game was sandwiched in between. That's the only reason why they haven't lost four in a row, basically. South Carolina lost, Tennessee lost, and now the loss to Duke. And, you know, Dabo Swinney is letting, you know, politics or religion or whatever it is, he's kind of got, you know, trying to run his program at Clemson, is kind of running it down into the ground. You know, look, I'm not gonna say that I don't think you can call it a dynasty anymore at Clemson right now. I mean, they haven't been to the playoff in a couple of years, and now you sit there and you go down and you lose by three touchdowns to Duke. It's hard to continue calling it a dynasty. But, I mean, he can get it back here sooner, you know, maybe in the next year or two, possibly. But he's going to have to change his tune on NIL, on the transfer portal. I mean, look, we can all have things that we don't agree with or whatever. But guess what? If you want your program to do what you want it to do, to reach the heights that Clemson was enjoying just several years ago, you're going to have to kind of adapt. And Dabo Swinney is being hard-headed and not wanting to do that right now. Until he changes that tune, more of what happened Monday night is going to continue to happen. So, yeah, I mean, I had to start off with that game. I had to. So, you know, Clemson goes, they fall to number 25 in the poll. Duke enters the poll at number 21, I think it was. Going to be interesting to see what Duke can do here. Can they really be a contender in this ACC? Right now, and we're going to talk about that Florida State LSU game here in just a little bit. I mean, I had Florida State winning the ACC anyways. I had Florida State going to Death Valley and beating Clemson here later this year or whatever. So it's not nothing that's happened so far except Duke winning by three touchdowns is really surprising me about what's going on so far. Speaking of the AP poll, another team entered the AP poll. The Colorado Buffaloes. Here's Coach Prime talking his talk. I'm not sure who that was that Coach Prime was directing all of that to, but I'm sure there's probably a countless number of media that said some of the same things about his football team. I don't think there's any question about that. We've seen it all over social media, YouTube, and all of that, everybody having an opinion of what they thought Colorado was going to be and what Coach Prime was going to be able to do with that football team here in season one. All of the, you know, all of the things that he's done with that football team, basically gutting the football team and basically bringing in a whole new crop of players out of the transfer portal. We've seen and heard all of the so-called experts or all of the big-time media talking about it and kind of talking down on Prime, talking down on Colorado and all of that. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I mean, I will sit here and admit to you that I have my criticism for Prime as well. My criticism goes back to, you know, in my opinion, Jackson State not being able to finish the job in his last two seasons there. They dominated the SWAC, did not lose a game in the last season. But then they got to the Celebration Bowl. First season there, 2021, they were blown out by South Carolina State. Then just last season, they get to the Celebration Bowl. A lot closer game, but they still lose to North Carolina Central. That was the biggest criticism I've had. Because I'm like, look, if you look at how Prime has recruited, he's got the best team in the SWAC by a long shot. Okay? He's got the most talent. Sure, you know, again, yeah, I understand he had to fit that talent together. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that Prime didn't do a fantastic job at Jackson State. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is they did not finish the job and win the Celebration Bowl, which is the HBCU National Championship game. I don't really like that name, to be honest with you. It's cool, I guess. I get it. But look, man, that was my biggest criticism of Coach Prime. And also because that was why I felt like it was, you know, It was a little bit unfulfilled in his time at Jackson State. Just a little bit. Otherwise, I mean, look, you know, you see everything that he did at that on campus there at that university. for HBCU sports, football in general or whatever, for the swag, all of that, fantastic. Do not get me wrong. I want to see what he's going to do when he's got equal talent, or he doesn't have talent that's equal to the team he's playing against. And that's what we thought we had this past Saturday afternoon in Fort Worth, Texas. To me, the Colorado Buffaloes kind of proved all of that wrong. They look like the more talented team than TCU Saturday to me. I mean, I think once you get down, once you get past that two deep, I think Colorado still has some holes in there. I just, you know, I think that they could have some depth issues as we go further into the season. But you talking about that, you talking about the ones and the twos, I think they can probably play with anybody. But it's going to be interesting to see how they, you know, how they match up with certain teams coming up soon. And I tell you what, just looking not too far ahead into the future, September 30, USC. That is going to be an insane football game if Colorado is still undefeated. Don't let them be undefeated at that point. But going back to Saturday, man, the thing, I tell you what, man, it was extremely impressive what I saw of this football team. The polish of that offense was crazy, but it goes back to Shedeur Sanders, dude. I think it goes back to this TCU defense partially, too. Now, you can't, you gotta mention that. I mean, this TCU defense has given up four in their last three games, 45 to Michigan last season in the semifinal, 65 to Georgia, and Georgia took their foot off the gas pedal at halftime. They gave up 65 in that game. Georgia could have scored 90 if they wanted to. And then they give up 45 to Colorado. A Colorado team has got like 75 new players. But Shedeur Sanders is just that good, dude. He's just that good. And I think a lot of people were expecting him to be more of an athletic guy that, you know, needs to get better in the pocket. It's totally the opposite. This dude is all, since day one in Jackson, Mississippi, he has been a pocket passer. That's the thing that really, I really love about this dude's game. I mean, he's in control of that football team. He's in control of that offense start to finish. Start to finish. Did he have some down games at Jackson State? Yes, he did. He absolutely did. And I tell you what, this dude threw for 510 yards in this game Saturday. He only had one game at Jackson State in the SWAC, the FCS, where he had 400 yards. One game. He had a few 300-yard games and all of that. He had one 400-yard game. And he puts up 510 against TCU. Crazy performance. I could sit here and talk an hour about Travis Hunter. He made the play of the game, no question about that. I mean, there were several plays we could call the play of the game. But the play of the game, the turning point of the game, was unquestionably the interception on the goal line. I mean, that was just ridiculous. And it came at a point where, if I'm not mistaken, TCU could have gone up two scores. If he doesn't make that play, you just kind of felt, to me anyway, I felt like Colorado was getting tired. They had the drive, I think, the prior drive. I think it was the drive just prior to TCU getting the ball back, where they scored on a long touchdown pass, and Shiloh Sanders kind of just, I don't know, he kind of made what looked to me like a tired tackle attempt on the guy that went and scored that touchdown for TCU. I was like, oh, yeah, they kind of look tired right now. I think they came out and they had to punt the ball right back to TCU. And then Travis Hunter made that incredible play there on the goal line to save the game. And in my opinion, give them that boost that they needed to finish that game off. Crazy game, man. Crazy game, to say the absolute least. And now all of the talk is there. I mean, the Sanders are talking. Every last one of them is talking their talk. They're talking their ish on social media big time. I don't necessarily agree with all of that. I don't blame them because of everything that's been said about them. But we're going to see how this thing plays out, man. But I tell you one thing. The one thing I can pretty much guarantee you, if you are old enough to remember Georgetown, those John Thompson Georgetown teams of the 80s and 90s, where if you were black dude, during that time I was in school and everything, young guy, whatever, I loved Alabama, but I also kind of liked Georgetown as well. So I had a couple hats. I didn't have a lot of gear like some of my classmates and everything did, but I had a little bit. I had a couple hats. I think I had a jacket or something, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly as well. Look for that same thing to happen here with the Colorado Buffaloes. It's going to be crazy, man. It really is. I'm happy for Coach Prime. Again, I hope that he would have stayed at Jackson State a little bit longer. I can't help but say that. But if this guy can do what he's doing right now and hopefully enhance himself and then open doors for other coaches that look like him to get better jobs, to at least get their foot in the door in college football at the FBS level, in the NFL, more power to him. Crazy, man. So my congrats go to him. We'll see how this thing ends, man. I'm gonna pump the brakes, though, man. Okay, that's why I got this show titled Pumping the Brakes. All of this stuff we saw this weekend, even Clemson, look, Clemson can still get back into this thing. I don't think that they will with the team as their team is constructed right now, but you can't say that they're out of it. You can't say Clemson's out of it. They could beat Florida State. I can't sit here and say, oh, Colorado is that we know what Colorado is just yet. Do we know how talented they are? Absolutely. But we got to see them against some other teams in that league. And you sit there and look at that league. They went undefeated this past weekend. The Pac-12 is doing their thing. They've got quarterbacks throughout that conference. I don't know. Shedeur Sanders may have thrown his name to be the second best quarterback in that league right now, just with that performance the other day. But again, you have to pump the brakes on that, because again, you have to look at TCU's defense. Are Shedeur Sanders and Travis Hunter the top two Heisman candidates out of week one? Probably. Maybe you throw Jordan Travis into that because of his performance against LSU. Yeah, you got to pump your brakes on a lot of that stuff that we're talking right now. But, man, it is exciting to talk about. It really is. So, anyway, man, congrats to Coach Prime. Congrats to Duke. Two incredible football games. And what, like I told you, man, you sit there and you look at a college football schedule, there are going to be two or three of them every single season. They were like, man, where are we going to find the good games? This was kind of that weekend, because even the best game that we had on the schedule turned out to be a dud in the second half, right? Unless you're a Florida State fan, that is. But yet we found two fantastic games anyway, or at least two fantastic stories to talk about anyway, despite, you know, maybe not having all the marquee matchups that we kind of normally like to see. Anyway, man, we're going to take a quick break, man. We're going to come back and we're going to get into this SEC stuff. Again, we're going to talk about that Florida State game. What a performance they had in the second half against the LSU Tigers. Obviously, we're going to get into Alabama. We'll talk a little bit of Auburn, obviously. We'll talk about that Alabama-Texas game coming up this next weekend. We're going to start off with this NFL, man. We got a few games to talk about in the NFL as they get their thing started this week as well. We'll do all that after the break right here on Ball About the South. This week's HBCU Baller of the Week is none other than Trezon Conley of the Prairie View A&M Panthers. Huge game in their 37-34 win at Texas Southern last weekend. Conley, 20 of 33 passing, 275 yards, 2 touchdowns. Prairie View looking like they can be really tough in that SWAC West again. Trezon Conley, HBCU Baller of the Week right here on Ball About the South. Okay, y'all, we're back in Ball About the South. During my opening segment, I mentioned that it was a really big surprise how Clemson lost to Duke. I mean, and obviously it was. And I mentioned that it was probably the only surprise or definitely the biggest surprise of the weekend. There was another huge surprise, man, and that was the Florida State Seminoles and the way they dominated the LSU Tigers in the second half. Especially, I'd say the last 17, 18 minutes of the game, where it just looked like Florida State was using LSU as a punching bag. Their physicality was extremely impressive. And mind you, I mean, sit there and think about what I just said about Duke. Physicality. Those are words we've not really heard about teams in the ACC except for Clemson. So, very interesting development here, to say the least. You sit there and look at this LSU game, man. The Tigers go down hard there in the second half. They are at one point down 45-17, end up losing 45-24. Had that late touchdown pass from Jaden Daniels. But it was almost like LSU kind of folded up their tent there in the fourth quarter, which is really crazy to think about. I'm not going to really say that that's what happened. That's what it looked like. And I'm very shocked, to be very honest with you. And now it's all of a sudden, time for a lot of soul searching there in Baton Rouge. Now look, again, the title of this show, the title of this episode is Pumping the Brakes. So I think you got to pump the brakes on this. A lot of people are thinking that LSU may be done because of this loss. And with their schedule, they may be. But obviously they're not. They're capable of going through the rest of their schedule and doing what they need to do to get to the college football playoff. Depending on how it goes, I mean, they may could lose one more game. Obviously, that game would have to be in Tuscaloosa right now. And obviously, if you're an LSU fan, I know it might not be might not be what you want to hear, but you should be Alabama fans right now. You don't want to sit there and have Alabama lose a couple games. I'm not trying to tell you that because I'm an Alabama fan. I'm just telling you that because you have to look at it that way. I don't try to tell anyone what to do or anything like that, but I try to say to Alabama fans a lot, I understand the hate between Alabama and Auburn or LSU, Tennessee, Georgia, whatever. But I'm like, look, we need these teams to win because if you lose a game, you want these teams to be as highly ranked as possible. Okay? And, LSU has the opportunity to come in, do what they need to do between now and November 4th, and then go to Tuscaloosa and try to win that game and then get right back into the playoff hunt. It's a doable thing. But, you've got, obviously Alabama has to pull their end of the bargain. You can't have Alabama with three losses or something like that. Not saying that's going to happen. I'm just saying. So, again, you look at this football game, though. Really, the more important thing is the right now anyway. It's way too early to be sitting there talking about anything in November. Why did we see this from the LSU Tigers? I was not surprised that Florida State won the game. I mean, I picked LSU to win, but I picked LSU to win a tight, highly contested ball game somewhere. I think the score I came up with was around 31-27, 34-30, a game very similar to the one we saw last season in the Superdome. That's what I thought we would see. Didn't turn out that way. But, you know, for them to get punched in the mouth at the end of the game was really, really kind of puzzling. I'll tell you one thing that was also puzzling was Harold Perkins in that football game. Harold Perkins, and I'm not going to say that it was his fault, and I really, Brian Kelly, head coach of the LSU Tigers, is kind of, even though he may not be saying it's his fault, he may not be admitting it, he's kind of telling on himself because, and you go back and you look at the tape, look at that game, you see Harold Perkins a lot in the middle of the field trying to play coverage, and Brian Kelly was, you know, talking to media about, hey, you know what? I think Harold Perkins needs to do this for his draft purposes to the NFL draft. And I'm like, what does the NFL draft have to do with your football team right now? Here's Brian Kelly talking about Harold Perkins.
You know, certainly a question that we have talked about. There's a lot going on. And you could clearly look at Harold and what he's asked to do versus, you know, lining him up off the edge. Player development has to be thought about. You know, where he goes at the next level has to be thought about. And then impacting our team. So I think that there is a I think there's a happy medium there that we could probably strike. And we've already begun to look at how we can be most effective for Harold and for LSU.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. I'm sure I'm not the only one that felt that. I did not get that game plan from Brian Kelly. I really didn't. I guess you have to commend him in thinking about the kid's future or whatever, but this is about you winning football games, and I don't think, you know, look, Harold Perkins has plenty of time to sit here and get better in coverage. I mean, he has another season of eligibility after this one. This dude is a sophomore. He was a true freshman last year. So I don't get that. And I think LSU fans have to be questioning it really big time as to why Brian Kelly or in their defensive staff decided to go that route. Obviously, you want Harold Perkins causing as much havoc, especially to a guy like Jordan Travis, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Travis obviously took advantage of that. He was not pressured enough, obviously, especially in that second half. And you sit there and you think about it, the LSU secondary could have used the help. I think the secondary could be a weakness. But then again, you sit there and you look at the receivers. Look at this dude, Wilson, number 14 for Florida State. And then you look at Coleman, number 4, transferred in from Michigan State. This dude was incredible. All Travis had to do was throw the football up to him. That's all he had to do. Just throw the ball up. So, at that point, to me, I think you better be trying to get some pressure on the quarterback. Whatever way you got to do it. I mean, you know, you don't want to sell out. But, yeah, very, very interesting comments there from Brian Kelly. So, we'll see what LSU can do going forward. Jaden Daniels will look at the game he had. I'm not going to say he played bad. I know he had a really bad interception there in scoring range. That hurt LSU a lot there in the first half. LSU could have really possibly had a two-touchdown lead going into the half. And, or at least maybe not two touchdowns, but two score lead. They could have been up by 10. Ended up only being up by 3. And they got nothing done on either side of the football in the second half. Nothing. So, we'll see what LSU has coming, you know, in store for us in the future, man. That's all you can say at this point. Florida State, I did not do a prediction on the Final Four of the CFP. I did not do a prediction. But if I did one, Florida State would have been in my playoff. Even though I had LSU beating them this weekend, I predicted that. I feel like Florida State is good enough to go undefeated in the ACC. I really do. I think North Carolina is obviously going to be a pretty good team with Drake May. At least they would be able to score, you would think. We'll have to see about Duke. We'll have to see about a couple other teams in that league. Obviously, they do still have to go to Clemson. I understand that. I just, from what I saw of this team on Sunday night, I have no doubts now that the Florida State Seminoles have a very good chance to get to the college football playoff. Very good chance. I mean, they could lose that Clemson game and very well still win the ACC and be just fine to make the playoff. They don't have to win that Clemson game necessarily right now. So, yeah, man. Very interesting game there in Orlando, Florida on Sunday night. And the LSU Tigers dropping the polls from number five to number 14. The team that was number 4 ahead of them last week moved up a spot to number 3. And that team, the Alabama Crimson Tide. Yeah, I'll talk about them for a couple minutes. And by the way, while I'm talking, I have kind of trying to get back into my writing a little bit. I have an article on Jalen Milroe that I've finished, and kind of goes a little bit in depth. I would definitely appreciate it if you read that article. It's on ballaboutsouth.com. Again, it's not Ball About the South. It's ballaboutsouth.com. That is my website. It's not anything fancy or anything like that, but it's a website where I'm, or you know, a blog or whatever you want to call it, where I'm kind of starting this. I'm putting my shows on there, links to my shows and all of that, and I'm doing a little writing. I also have an article on Graham Mertz, the quarterback from Florida, in his performance the other night on Thursday night against Utah. We're going to talk about that really quick as well here in just a second, but so really would like you to check that out. But Jalen Milroe, this situation with him, obviously, a lot of criticism going into the season, a lot of doubt nationally, a lot of doubt around people around the SEC, and a lot of doubt with the fan base at Alabama. Obviously, you're not going to erase those doubts. No matter how good he played, no matter how well he played this past Saturday night against Middle Tennessee, those doubts were going to still be there for the most part. And that's fine. Because, we're pumping the brakes. So, but I think if you look at his performance Saturday night, I think you have to be encouraged if you're an Alabama fan. And I think you have to be, if you're national media, one particular media member I can think of is Chris Doering there on the SEC Network, and he's talked all offseason about Jalen Milroe. Will it work out? Who does he have to throw to? Because Alabama's receivers last year were a big time disappointment. What about the offensive line? So obviously he was in the studio Saturday night after the game. And I like exactly what he said. And I think this is what he's, I mean, I'm not going to play what he said. And I'm probably paraphrasing the stew out of it. But I'm just going to say it as simply as I can. We saw what we needed to see. Point blank simple. I think what you wanted to see going into that football game from Jalen Milroe, you wanted to see him have control of the huddle. I think we saw that. I think you wanted to see him have control of the team at the line of scrimmage. I think we definitely saw that. And then you wanted to see him make throws. And you saw all of that. You saw, again, was it beautiful? Was it, you know, is that Peyton Manning? No. But he made all the throws he had to make. There were, you know, I know there were a couple balls he bounced. I know he bounced the ball to Malik Benson there on an out pattern toward the sideline. That was a bad pass. He almost threw the interception there on the little screen pass there on the right sideline there in the first quarter. Almost threw that. Those things happen, you know. But when he had to make throws, man, he made them. I mean, and he showed off his arm. He threw balls sideline to sideline with ease. Those balls were getting where they needed to go. He was hitting receivers in stride. Now, the one thing that, you know, obviously we saw him run the ball. We knew we were going to see that. You're going to see that every time this dude goes onto the field. And obviously we saw the bad snap from the center that bounced on the ground, and he picked it up and ran it in for the end zone, and ran into the end zone from 24 yards out. Everybody saw that, and, you know, very impressive and all of that. But he also had some other really good runs as well. We know he's going to do that. We got there midway of the second quarter. My thought process in kind of watching Milroe in this game, we haven't seen him throw deep yet. We have not seen him throw a deep ball yet. And almost as soon as I said it, Miro hits that deep ball to Isaiah Bunn, number 17, for the touchdown. And once you do that, once he did that, I mean, he made all the throws that he had to make. He made the other throw on the right sideline to the former Georgia receiver, Jermaine Burton. And then he ended it off with the other deep ball to Amari Nyeblack, number 84. And Nyeblack is a guy that was talked about a lot in fall camp because of his ability to do just that. Alabama is really quietly, has a really good tight end room. They have this guy named C.J. Dupre. I think that's how he says it. A transfer from Maryland. They have Robbie Oots, who's kind of a, you know, Dupre is kind of your hybrid guy. He blocks, but he can go out. Really good receiver as well. Oots is kind of your blocking back, kind of your H-back type guy. And then you have Nyeblack, who's kind of an H-back type guy, or really a tight end, but you can split him out wide. You can put him in the slot. He's athletic, but he's, you know, a good blocker as well. Really deep tight end room was one thing that a lot of people, I don't think, are really talking about a lot with this Alabama team. And I don't think they've had that element in the last couple of years on this football team. So I think that's a really good thing as well. So Nyeblack able to get deep there on that ball. Milroe put the ball where it had to be, in stride. Now, Middle Tennessee State's defense is not going to be as good as even Texas, who's coming up this weekend. Or you name a defense left on Alabama's schedule, there are a bunch of them that are going to be much better than Middle Tennessee State. I will say this, Middle Tennessee State did a lot of blitzing. They're really an aggressive style team that really gets downhill at you from a number of directions. And I thought Milroe handled it well, hanging in the pocket, doing what he had to do. Yeah, he took a couple sacks. But, overall, man, Milroe did what he had to do. exactly what Chris Doering said. Defensively, Alabama, I thought, looked really good. Again, we're talking about Middle Tennessee State. So, you know, it is what it is. But if you see how that team was kind of flying around the ball, or flying to the ball, I should say, the other night, that's something you really hadn't seen in this football team in the last couple seasons. They look a lot more aggressive. They look more athletic than they've looked in the last couple seasons. Jaheim Otis looks really good up front. This is a guy that was around 400 pounds, or maybe just over 400 pounds, seriously, when he got on campus. He's down to around 319, 320 is what I'm hearing. Maybe even a little lighter than that. He looks fantastic. he is going to be, I think, something in the middle of that defense up front. But they're also saying he could play a little bit of end as well, which is going to be crazy. But yeah, I like what I saw the other night, man. Malachi Moore and Jalen Key is the guy that got the interception there in the second quarter. Both those guys did sustain injuries, but they are said to be not serious in their day-to-day. So hopefully we'll get those guys back for Texas Saturday night, but we'll see. But the other big factor, the other big thing, two penalties all night. Two. And that's kudos to the defense. Again, I think maybe having more confidence in where they're supposed to be lined up, knowing where they're supposed to be lined up. And again, Jalen Miro taking control of the huddle. No illegal procedures from that offensive line. No holds. And again, this is a team in Middle Tennessee State that did a lot of blitzing. Again, I think if you're an Alabama fan, you have to be cautious, but you have to be very enthusiastic about what you saw on Saturday night. Auburn, I think you have to be very enthusiastic as well. You got Red Zone Robbie, man. Red Zone Robbie from Hoover, Alabama. Robbie Ashford, who was the starting quarterback much of last season for Auburn. He's the second string guy now behind Peyton Thorne, but he was the guy that they called upon when they got into goal line situations or got into the red zone. Ended up scoring three touchdowns in that football game. Thorne looked good as well. The Tigers won the game 59-14 over UMass. Really good football and really good game from Auburn as far as I could tell. Running backs are good. I mean, we all know about Auburn's going to keep good running backs all the time. I'm not surprised by any of that. But again, it was UMass, so we have to see. We'll learn maybe a little bit more about this Auburn football team this week when they go to Cal out there, way out there in California. And I'm going to tell you what, I looked at that. I wanted to kind of peep at Cal just a little bit as well because I wanted to get a feel for what Auburn's going to run into. I kind of like that football team. Again, I'm not saying Cal's going to win the game or nothing. They have three really good running backs that just really ran it all over North Texas the other day. Something to watch out for. Obviously, I don't expect them to have that type of success that they had. They put up 58 points against North Texas out of the American on Saturday. Obviously, they're not going to do anything like that against Auburn. But me looking at that game, and I'm just sitting there, because me, all summer, I've been sitting there wondering about that football game. I was like, oh, what is that game going to look like when Auburn goes out to Cal Berkeley? That game airs immediately after Alabama, Texas on Saturday night, by the way. And so I've been thinking about that game all summer to a degree. I'll tell you what, I think it's going to be a really good ball game. I think Cal can hang with Auburn. I think Auburn still wins the game. But from what I saw the other night, and again, this was North Texas, okay, but I was a little bit impressed. I have been impressed with the Pac-12. They're trying to go out with a bang. They are trying to go out with a bang. Very interesting stuff. So Auburn better beware. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to necessarily put them on upset alert necessarily, but I think they better beware of what they're going to run into at California this coming Saturday. But yeah, I think if you're an Auburn fan, you have to be excited about what you saw. They had sellout crowd. They've sold out season tickets for the first time ever and all that there at Auburn. A lot of people excited about Hugh Freeze. So really good football game there from the Auburn Tigers, man. Really good football game. Real brief. He had the game Thursday night. I'm not surprised. Again, I'm not surprised that Florida lost the game. And to be honest with you, I think I called for the score to be Utah 27, Florida 20, and that's without their starting quarterback Cam Rising. I really thought Utah was probably going to win that game by double digits. I was just like, man, maybe Florida's going to, you know, surprise me a little bit and actually score a few points. Maybe this guy Mertz is going to be a little bit better than advertised or better than some people are advertising him to be. And I just felt like, okay, maybe, you know, I'm going to give him a little bit benefit of the doubt. Rising is not there. Maybe Utah struggles to score a little bit. Maybe Florida keeps it into a one-score game. Totally wrong. I could not have been more wrong. Just, you know, and again, this thing goes back. And no matter what you talk about concerning Florida, it's all going to go back to Billy Napier. I don't know who Florida could have hired. And I'm not trying to down Billy Napier here. I don't know. I can't really remember who was available at the time when they made that hire. But it just didn't make a lot of sense. I mean, and that's not to say that Billy Napier isn't a really good coach. And again, this thing is not over for Florida as far, or him, more importantly, right now. Florida is not a team that's going to be talking about trying to contend in the SEC. We all knew that from the jump. There's no shock in that. But I'm talking about him right now going forward. I think he gets another year. Unless it's, if they at least win 5 or 6 games, he'll get another year. But if it's anything south of that, he could be in trouble. But to me, the job, and I hate to say this about anyone. I don't want to say to anyone that any one person can't do anything or whatever. But there are jobs that are just a little bit too big. And Billy Napier, to me, is, you know, that Florida job right now, especially the way Dan Mullen left it. Especially the way Dan Mullen left it. You got to throw that in there. It's a little bit too big for him right now. Florida, you know, we'll see how patient they are with him. Maybe he is the guy. But we knew it was going to take a while. Same thing at Florida State. After Jimbo Fisher left it a mess. And Mike Norvell has finally got it to where it is now. We'll see if Florida has that kind of patience for 2 or 3 years. Will they have that type of patience to sit there and see that through? We'll see. So anyway, man, and you look at those games. You look at South Carolina losing to North Carolina. You look at LSU losing to FSU, you look at then Utah beating Florida. A lot of people are throwing it out there. Really bad weekend for the SEC. That's 3 losses against 3 ranked teams. I'm not really worried about that. Because, again, I expected Florida to lose. We know Florida is not one of the top echelon teams in this league. LSU lost to a team that I think could be in the college football playoff. So the way LSU lost, yeah, that's concerning. LSU losing is not. And then, of course, South Carolina and North Carolina was a toss-up game. So I don't think it's really much to worry about to me. But, hey, you know, we'll see how that goes here as the season goes on. But I'm not worried about the SEC not winning against three ranked teams so far this season. I'm just not really – I don't think that's a big deal. My SEC player of the week, man, my game ball, my baller award. In the SEC, I got to go with Jalen Milroe. There were some other really good performances, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I felt like it was probably going to go to a player with LSU if they had won that game. But, you know, you look around the league, and you know, you have some really good performances by Mississippi State and Ole Miss, don't get me wrong. But I think, you know, Texas A&M really played well. Forget the kid, number four, had four touchdown receptions, if I'm not mistaken. He is right there. He would be right there. He would be right there for sure. Really impressive game by him. I took a peep at that game as well. Klegman looked good. Klegman. I don't know where I got that from. Wegman looked really good leading that football team. He played well toward the end of last season. We'll see if that continues. But he has some guys to throw to out there. A&M has some receivers. A&M has weapons. We'll see if they are able to put it all together. This dude has weapons. So a lot of great performances out there. Don't get me wrong. Milton looked good with Tennessee. Arkansas had a good game. KJ Jefferson, all those guys. Arkansas, I think, had five takeaways in their victory on Saturday. Obviously, we talked briefly about Auburn. Georgia was, you know, not the most impressive Georgia I think people would want to see. But, I mean, really, is that really a big deal right now? No, it's not. So, I'm just going to have to go with Jalen Milroe, though, man. I just think with everything going on, it's not necessarily his performance or only his performance. It's everything that's going on, everything that's been said about him coming into this season, and for him to ball out, setting a record, by the way, three touchdown passes, two touchdowns rushing. That is a record. No Alabama quarterback has ever done that before now. Three touchdowns in the air and two passing. That really didn't seem right, but according to everyone that knows, that is the case. So I've got to give it to Jalen Milroe, man. He is my first SEC baller of the week for the 2023 season. Congrats to him, man. Obviously, he's not going to know anything about it, but it's all good, man. It's all good. Anyway, we're going to take another quick break, man, and come back. We'll get into this NFL. We're finally at week one in the NFL. We've got some NFL games to talk about in the AFC and NFC South. We'll do that. You listen to Ball About the South with C. Wood. All right, y'all, we're back in. Let's talk about some of these games that we got coming up this weekend if we are actually fully back to football. College football, obviously, on Saturday, and then of course get Sunday full of NFL. You got the NFL game tonight as I'm recording right now, the Kansas City Chiefs hosting the Detroit Lions. We got that one going on, but we got the weekend full of football, and again, we are fully back to football. So we got some big games around these parts this coming weekend, and obviously, man, I got to start off with that game in New Orleans, in the Superdome, the Tennessee Titans and the New Orleans Saints. Yeah, I think a very interesting matchup. I think this, I mean, obviously, when you sit there and just look at this game on paper, I think it kind of jumps out to, you know, I'm not going to say that it's going to be looked at as one of the marquee games of the weekend or anything like that. Matter of fact, it's more than likely not going to be looked at that way. But I think this game is going to be really interesting. I think it's a very intriguing game because you have two teams that have a lot of question marks about them. I think two teams that have more question marks than probably most of the teams in the NFL have. You got the Titans coming into this football game. You got questions on offense. New offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly. I mean, he's been with the team. He's just in a different role. A lot of people, you know, were wanting to see that, wanting to see Tim Kelly in that role after the last couple of seasons, of course. So we'll have that go on. You've got, obviously, the question marks there with Ryan Tannehill trying to hold on to his job. Looking at, the Titans drafting QBs in the last two drafts. So, or at least early in the last two drafts. So, you have that going on. And then, of course, you got questions around those guys. You have a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, who's coming on board as a wide receiver, who's, obviously coming in to help a wide receiver core that, was hurting last season and has been really down since they lost A.J. Brown. So, there are too many questions to sit here and name all of them for the Titans or the Saints, really. Running game, what's Derrick Henry going to look like? Defensively, what's that Titans pass rush going to look like? Secondary, all of that stuff. And then you go over to the Saints, you talk about Derek Carr. I mean, that's going to be the first question that's going to be asked of the Saints. What is he going to look like? Did the Saints gamble correctly? I mean, I don't really call it a gamble, but a lot of people are calling it a gamble with them coming out and signing Derek Carr. Is he going to be the guy that can get them back to something that resembles what they were under Drew Brees? What about, Alvin Kamara? And they're, not having him for a few weeks in their running game. What about their defense? What about Michael Thomas? The questions are just abundant on both sides of this game. So, my thing is, man, you sit there and you look at this football game. Saints come in 3-point favorite, and basically that's because they're home. We know that. I think that it's going to be a really tight game. I don't think it's in question. The other part that really intrigues me about this football game is you sit there and you look at New Orleans, even though I think they're a really good defense. Obviously led by Cam Jordan up front. They have really good, good guys in the secondary, Lattimore, Honey Badger, all of that. Maybe not the most physical team out there. It's kind of weird to say that, but so obviously the Titans are one of the most physical teams in the NFL. When they're able to run the football, and that's something they were not able to do last season because they couldn't throw it, and no one respected the passing game, so everybody lined up to stop the run. So yeah, it's really an intriguing football game. So many questions. I guess they should call it the question mark bowl and just put a big question mark there at midfield. I mean, every team has questions the first game of the season, even a team like the Kansas City Chiefs. But it's just really, this game to me just really has more and has more intrigue than a lot of other games. I think this Tennessee Titans team is going to be really good defensively. I think they made some obvious changes there, a lot of them. But I think they answered back in a lot of those cases. I think they filled in those holes pretty well. I like the Titans going into New Orleans and win this football game. I really do. I think, again, it's going to be really tight, more than likely low-scoring football game. I like the Titans, man. I like the Titans in a tight game in the Superdome, 20-16. Let's move on. We'll keep it in the AFC South. We look at the Houston Texans, man. Obviously, we know C.J. Stroud, his debut, pretty good matchup, I guess you could say, going up against Lamar Jackson as far as, like, you know, QB matchup or whatever, at least the names anyway. C.J. Stroud's got a ways to go before he, you know, gets to that point where we look at him, look at him as being in a good QB matchup or whatever. But at least the names are really good. Lamar finally back off of injury with the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens are a sexy pick to win the AFC North, which, you know, you can get with that. I can see that. My pick in the AFC North is still the Bengals, but I can definitely see the Ravens winning this division. I think that division is stacked. I think you should also watch out for the Pittsburgh Steelers in that division. I think that team is really, really talented. I think Pickett is going to have a really good second season there. I think you're going to have a better season out of Najee Harris. So I think that division is going to be crazy. But in this game here, I mean, Houston, they go into this game 9.5-point dogs at Baltimore. Obviously, man, I got to go with the Ravens in that. I think the Ravens are definitely going to be a lot better this season. I think they should be a playoff team. We'll see how that goes. Like I said, I've got the Bengals winning that division. I just, you know, I still believe in what they're doing there in Cincinnati. But anyway, give me the Ravens to win that game. 9.5, that's a lot of points to cover, but I think probably the Ravens do find a way to cover that 9.5. Now, the other game inside the AFC South, the Jacksonville Jaguars and Indianapolis Colts, that game taking place at Lucas Oil Stadium. A lot of talk about the Colts lately with the whole Jonathan Taylor thing. Obviously, Anthony Richardson making his debut. Really good thing. So you got two quarterbacks, one Ohio State, one from Florida, making their debuts inside the AFC South. Really good stuff there. But ultimately, man, the Jaguars come in a 4.5-point favorite in this football game. It's going to be tough for the Colts to pull that out, even though they are at home. I like the Jacksonville Jaguars to pull out that first game of the season with Trevor Lawrence and company leading the way. So, yeah, so let's switch it up, man. Let's switch it up to the NFC South. I would say the big game of the day, or of the weekend anyway, in the NFC South would be Carolina Panthers. Another rookie quarterback, and this is, you know, the number one pick of them all, making his debut. Bryce Young, I'm talking about, from the Alabama Crimson Tide, making his debut against the Atlanta Falcons. They're inside the Mercedes-Benz Dome. Panthers come in a 3.5-point dog against the Falcons. The Falcons are another team I have a lot of questions about. Maybe some other people don't, because I think a lot of, I guess most people I see are either picking the Falcons or the Saints. Obviously, you got a lot of people that don't trust the Saints simply because of Dennis Allen, simply because of, you know, Carmichael, you know, the offensive coordinator, and all, you know, a lot of question marks about them. A lot of people questioning Arthur Smith in Atlanta as well, but then he's getting a lot of support as well. I'm not really understanding really why he's getting the questions that he's getting so far. I'm not really understanding what people were expecting of the Falcons the last couple of seasons since he's been there. But anyway, you look at this football game. The one thing that we saw with Bryce Young in preseason, the offensive line did not protect him well. He took a couple hits, which is not a good thing, obviously. We'll see how that extends out here into the regular season. The other thing about that, they really don't have the weapons on the outside. Obviously, DJ Moore is now in Chicago. So, yeah, Chark is kind of the number one receiver, I guess you'd say, right now for the Carolina Panthers. Not a lot of weapons out there for Bryce Young to throw to. But I think the defense is probably, you know, the Panthers' defense is probably the best defense in the NFC South. So, you know, you look at the Falcons, Bijan Robinson making his debut at running back. They've brought in a couple guys to try to help that pass rush on the other side there. Pass rush has been a huge issue for the Falcons for the last, seem like, 20 years. But okay, y'all, we're back in. We're going to close out the show with this segment, and get ready for big weekend, another big Saturday of college football as we kind of look at these huge games. Obviously, a couple huge games inside the SEC. There's one game a little bit outside the SEC that's pretty, actually, well, there are a couple games, to be honest with you. The Notre Dame-NC State game kind of grabs my attention a little bit. NC State is a team that, well, I'm going to put it to you like this. Every year, I mean, it seems like, at least the last few seasons anyway, NC State has been kind of a sexy pick to a certain degree by a lot of people that, you know, that kind of think that they're going to be a team that can really cause some havoc in the ACC. Okay. So, they've been sort of successful at times with that, but it is not, they've not fulfilled all of those expectations. You know, they don't have an ACC championship to show for that, basically, is where I'm going with that. So, you know, this is a huge game for NC State. A lot of people are really looking at that football team. Now, they come to this game 7.5-point underdog. They're at home against Notre Dame. A guy that's no stranger to anyone in the ACC, Sam Hartman, former Wake Forest quarterback, coming back to play within the ACC. Obviously, Notre Dame plays several ACC opponents, so there's no surprise there. Irish are ranked 10th in the country. They have looked really good in their first two games. Now, it's Navy. It was Navy in week zero, and last week in week one, it was Tennessee State. Tennessee State. I was on that stage to kind of get beat the way they did. I hate that, but, obviously, you know, it's a money game, and I still think it's the right thing to do for HBCUs and FCS teams alike to go out there and make their money. And then, to me, I think it's a good thing to give some of these kids a chance to play against some of the top competition. So, I'm not going to complain about that. But, yeah, they put it on them. Let's just be real about it. But you look at this football team, Notre Dame, I'm really impressed, man. I'm really impressed with Marcus Freeman and what he's done here in this first year and two games. I like them going on the road and winning this football game. It's just hard to sit here and believe in NC State. I mean, we just got done talking about an ACC team in Duke that, you know, in my opinion, has accomplished more than NC State has. And I think they have more they have more excuses why they probably shouldn't be a good football program. And it's, well, NC State has less excuses, rather, than Duke has of why they should be a really good program. I'm not saying they're not a decent program. NC State should be better, man. They just should be better. So this is a huge game for them. Huge game. I've got Notre Dame winning this game. And I think they probably, I think it'll be fairly close. I don't think Notre Dame's going to go in there and just blow the doors off of NC State, but I definitely like the Irish to close that game out. Team from down here, Sunbelt, Troy at Kansas State. That's an interesting game. Kansas State, obviously, a huge favorite in that game. 15.5. Maybe not as quite as huge as you think, but Troy is a team that's notorious for going on the road and winning big games like this. I don't think they pull this game out, but you just never know. I've got Kansas State winning the Big 12, so, you know, but Troy is a team that is always very pesky, man. So look out for that game, but give me Kansas State winning that game. I think they do get it done, but it would not surprise me if the Trojans cover that football game. Moving on, man, looking at some of the other games here on the slate this weekend, week two of the college football season. You got Clemson, you know, oh my goodness. They'll try to get back on track. They're playing at home this weekend. Texas A&M and Miami. Obviously a huge game. Another ACC versus SEC game. That game goes down at 2:30 Central Time. They're in Miami. Miami beat Texas A&M last season, which was one of the surprising outcomes, and no question about that. Last season with Texas A&M, can they get it done again? They're in Miami this time. I think it's possible, but I think Miami is another team in that ACC that just never really fulfills their expectations. And I think their expectations are actually tempered down this week. This season. You look at Texas A&M, they looked really good last week. They have a really good set of wide receivers. They already had a nice Smith, but they have a couple guys to go with him that make this team very dangerous. Colonel Wegman, he does seem to be the guy. He finished off that season for them last year and played really well. Comes back last week against in their game last week. Throws for 236 yards, but threw 5 touchdowns. A&M was very dominant in that football game. That's something in a lot of games that they even that they won last season that you could not say. We're sitting here watching this thing between Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Petrino. I guess so far so good, but this is the first real test, I would say. A&M going on the road, especially against an ACC team. The Aggies, they are giving up 3.5 points on the road in this football game. I think that sounds about right to me. I like the Aggies to cover that 3.5 and win the football game. I think they beat Miami 27-20. They're in Miami. I think A&M's defense, while I was impressed with them offensively last week, defensively, I think it's still where their bread is buttered. I still think that's a really good defense. I expect the Aggies to beat the U on Saturday afternoon. Let's see. Another big game. SEC versus AAC. Ole Miss at Tulane. Again, another 2:30 game. We got two really huge 2:30 games tomorrow. 2:30 Central Time, that is. Ole Miss, huge win last week. Put up 73 points. You got Jackson Dart as the starter, at least for right now, going up against a really good Tulane football team. I think they lost some guys to, you know, from that team last year. They went to the Cotton Bowl and beat USC. But this is still a really good football team. Yeah, Pratt there at quarterback, veteran. We know all about him. Obviously, they're missing some of their weapons from last season, like Ty-J Spears, who's going to be backing up Derrick Henry with the Tennessee Titans this season and going forward. I still think this is a really good football team. This game is being played. This game isn't being played at the Superdome. This is being played at Tulane, at their new little stadium there in New Orleans. Very intriguing game. So you look at the line in this football game. And actually, I'm not really seeing one here on this. Okay, interesting. Hold up. So, yeah, Ole Miss comes into the game 7-point favorites. Give me the Rebels, man. Give me the Rebels. But I think it's going to be a really tight game. I like Tulane to cover that 7 points. But I like old Mr. Win the game in a shootout. 47-45 over Tulane. I think right down to the wire in New Orleans, man. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. Next game up, Auburn, California. We talked a little bit about this game earlier in the show. Auburn, 6-point favorite there. Late night in Cal. In California, that is. I like Auburn to win the game. I like them to cover, but it would not surprise me at all if Cal covers that game, a backdoor cover. I like those running backs. Three-headed running back crew there at California. Would not surprise me. I got Auburn winning that game 33-20. Give me Auburn 33-24. But again, I could see it being a little bit tighter than that. I think it's gonna be a good game, but I think Auburn gets a late score and gets the cover in that football game. And then, of course, last but not least, we get to the game of the weekend in college. You got the Alabama Crimson Tide hosting, giving up 7 points to the Texas Longhorns. Now, last season. We all know what happened there in Austin. 20-19 victory for the Alabama Crimson Tide with Bryce Young making a couple huge plays on that huge drive that ended up in the game-winning field goal. Alabama played horribly in that football game. All right, 15 penalties for over 100 yards in that game. It really set the tone for the rest of the season with all the penalties that Alabama amassed on both sides of the football. So it was one of those things. Early in that game is where I kind of want to focus, though. Ewers is the quarterback that started that game. He will start the game on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa. Alabama had all sorts of problems early in that football game with Ewers finding their wide receiver Xavier Worthy. This dude was seemingly lonesome behind the defense that entire first quarter. And then Ewers got injured. Had a pretty bad injury because I think he was out for a few weeks there. And that changed the entire tone of the game. Okay, so Texas was... they had scored that early touchdown. I think they were up 10-0, if I'm not mistaken. Then Ewers got injured, and their offense basically went really stagnant. I think Alabama would have made adjustments in that game, and I think that you would have been still talking about a really tight game, but there's something you have to sit there and think about. Alabama did not have an answer for Xavier Worthy last season. Do they have one this season? I think Alabama's secondary is much improved from where they were last season. They looked pretty good last week, but again, that was Middle Tennessee. This is a whole different animal. I think Texas is going to score some points. I don't think Alabama's just going to go in there and shut them down or anything like that. But I do think Alabama is going to be a lot better offensively than they were last season. And I think that's what a lot of people are pointing to. Is that, well, how are they going to be better offensively when they lost their best offensive player? They lost the guy that was really, the guy that really gained most of their yards. That did anything that really happened good for Alabama offensively was due to what Bryce Young did. How are you going to replace that? So I think that's what has a lot of Texas Longhorn fans feeling really good about this game on Saturday night. It's got a lot of people in the media thinking that Texas can come in and pull off this victory. Obviously, they're definitely very capable. I'm not a believer in the Longhorns as far as fulfilling themselves being a national title contender and all of that. I'm not feeling it just yet. I've got to see it to believe it. This is still a team that lost 5 games last year, so they lost 4 other games after they lost to Alabama last season. I'm not feeling it, dude. I'm just going to be real. They look, and you sit there and you look at that football game last weekend. They played Rice last weekend, and Ewers had to pick himself up off the turf 2 or 3 times. Rice was able to get pressure on him a really good bit. Texas really, you know, maybe they sleepwalked through it. I'm sure that they were obviously very vanilla in what they showed offensively. So, you know, I'm sure that Sark was not really showing much. He didn't want to put anything on film for Alabama to be able to take advantage of. Totally understand that. But Rice had some opportunities in that game. Couldn't capitalize offensively. Like I said, I think Texas is a much improved team defensively from where they were a couple years ago. I'm just not sold that this Texas team is really a national title contender. We'll see how it goes. But I got Alabama winning this game. Alabama, again, comes in a 7-point favorite. I like Alabama to win. I think Alabama wins this game by double digits. I'm not seeing a blowout. I think we're talking about a game that's going to be in doubt in the fourth quarter. I'm not talking about a blowout or anything like that. I've got Alabama winning this game by double digits, 34-23. They're in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night. It's going to be rocking. I think Jalen Milroe is going to be just fine. And I think he will lead this Alabama football team to a big victory. Anyway, y'all, that kind of does it for me on this episode of Ball About the South, as we are fully back to football. But again, like I said earlier in this show, a lot of the action that we saw last weekend, I think we got to pump the brakes just a little bit, man. Just a little bit on a lot of the action that we saw last weekend. Again, I do really appreciate you joining me here on Ball About the South. I really appreciate it. Please remember to like, subscribe. Leave a comment. Let me know what you think about the podcast. Give me a 5-star rating if you feel it deserves it there on Apple, Spotify. And definitely, if this is the first time that you've tuned in to my little podcast right here, I absolutely hope it is not your last. Anyway, man, y'all be good out there. Enjoy the games. And come back next week to Ball About the South with me, C. Wood.